Good morning. So today's daf is Tzaddik. Today's daf is sponsored by Ira Miriam Grossman in honor of Ira's special birthday. 40? 39. Emir Tzashem until 120. And also we welcome back Ben Sion, who just got up sitting Shiva for his mother, and we dedicate our learning Le'ili Nishmasa. Chava Bas Ben Sion. And we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah and the family in a chama. All right, so Bosa, we left off on Peites Amud Beis. Peites Amud Beis. Kidarkinu Bekodesh. We never want to start on today's daf. We always want to take it back a little bit. It's like Shirayim. Shirayim. So listen to this. So remember, we left off actually 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from the bottom. So remember, again, the Gemara actually introduced us to this idea of Hefker based in Hefker. So the sugin which the Gemara was dealing with over here was this idea, the greater sugi we're in the middle of, is this idea that the rabbis can uproot biblical law. So the Gemara just gave an example of that by the marriage of the Kitana. And the Gemara explained the mechanics of that case. The reason why it works is Hefker based in Hefker, because based in Hefker, the ability again essentially to repossess money or to reallocate money. Rabbi Yitzchak says, how do we know this concept of Hefker based in Hefker? How do I know that Beis Din has the ability to go ahead and take money from one party and give it to another? Shinemar, listen to this. Kol asher lo yavo l'shlosha siyamim ba'atzas hasarim v'azkenim yecharam kol ruchusho v'hu yibadol mikal ha'gol. Rabbi, remember a couple of days ago we spoke about the idea that Levim did not come back with Ezra, and that's one of the reasons why the rabbis decreed that their Maaser Rishon be taken away and be given to the Kohanim, or to the Aniyim, depending on the opinion. So this pasuk over here is from Ezra, and in this pasuk, Ezra said, we're going back to Eretz Yisrael, and whoever does not report to the riverbank within 3 days, we're going to repossess your property. Now, the fact that Ezra can make such a statement like that, that we are going to take your property, indicates that what? That Lemaisa, again, Bezin has that ability to go ahead and possess and repossess property. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar says, no, it's from here. Ela nachalos asher nachalu Elazar HaKohen v'Yoshua Benun v'Roshia Avos Lematos B'nei Yisrael. These are the nachalos, these are the portions. And this again is from Sefer Yoshua. These are the portions that were apportioned by Elazar HaKohen Yoshua ben Nun with the Rashi HaAvos Lematos ben Israel, the heads of the tribes of Israel. V'chima inyon Rashim Eitzel Avos. So what's the Lashon of Rashi HaAvos? Why does the Pasuk use those two words? Rashi means heads, Avos means fathers. Listen to this. Elomar Lacha Ma Avos Manchilim B'neihem. Just like fathers have the ability to give over to their children everything they want, manchilin means cause them to inherit whatever they want. Af roshim manchilim asa'am komashi yirtsu. So too, again, the heads of the people, i.e. the Beis Din, has the ability to go ahead and cause the people to acquire whatever they want. So we'll say, so therefore, we have two different sources, but everybody agreeing with the same basic idea that what? Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. Beis Din indeed has the ability to go ahead and repossess and reallocate people's property. So the Gemara goes weiter. Umetamila. So we'll say, remember again, going back to the case of the man who married the Kitana. So the Braisa said that if he's a Kohen, he is able to go ahead and become Tameh for her. Again, this is after she reaches that age of maturity. Depending on what, remember again, we had a machlokis as to what criteria she must meet in order to go ahead and be considered in order to be fully vested in the marriage, because remember, again, we're talking over here about a rabbinic marriage where her brother or her father married her off. So we're saying again, whatever the barometer is, whether it's coma like we saw before, or chuppah, or signs of physical maturation, whatever it might be. The point is, the Gemara said that husband's permitted to become tummy for her. So the Gemara says, 1 second, but here's the situation where what? This is a rabbinic marriage. So midoraisa, if the husband is a Kohen, he should not be permitted to become tummy for her, because again, he's only rabbinically married. So how could he violate the biblical transgression for a rabbinic marriage? The only person who really could become tummy to her would be her own father. Of course, her father is dead in this case. So how could the rabbis allow the husband, to become tameh for her? To which the Gemara says, Mishum dahavi le meis mitzvah. Because in this situation where his ketana wife dies, she's a meis mitzvah. So Mar says, what are you talking about? Mi havi meis mitzvah? Also, remember, the case where her father's dead doesn't mean the rest of her family's dead. Umi havi meis mitzvah. mitzvah. Listen to this. It's actually an incredible insight into human psychology as well. V'hatanya eizehu meis mitzvah. What's the definition of a meis mitzvah? So the Gemara says, kol she'in lo kovrin. Anyone who has no one to bury them. What does that mean? Korei va'achirim onin oso. Einze meis mitzvah. If you put out the email, right? You put out the email, you put out the call and says that Reuven died. If people come and answer and say, okay, we'll come to the Levaya, then he's not a meis mitzvah. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. So again, so using this metric, why would this girl be a meis mitzvah? Hachanami kevan de lo yarsila karya v'lo aruna. We'll say a very sad statement. The Gemara says, because in this situation with this girl, since no one is going to inherit her, therefore, again, no one's going to take responsibility for her levaya. If that's the case, again, meaning the husband doesn't do it. Since that's the case, then lemaisa, again, she's considered to be a meis mitzvah, and therefore he's permitted to be matami for her. The husband, Cohen, is permitted to be matami for her, not as much because she's his wife, because it's only rabbinic marriage, but because she is a meis mitzvah. Top of tzaddik, va'ocheles beginot truma. And remember, again, she's permitted to eat truma because of him, to which the Gemara, again, says, well, so now the unasked question is, that how could she eat truma if consumption of truma is a daraisa, and she only has a rabbinic marriage, so how is she permitted to eat truma, to which the Gemara answers, but truma dirabanan, rabbinic truma she's permitted to eat. Tashma. Achol truma tzimeya mishalim chulim truma. So let's now get into an interesting case. Let's say a person ate, achol truma tzimeya, I being a non-Kohen, accidentally ate the coin's truma tzimeya. Rashi points out, b'shogeg, so I ate truma tzimeya. Remember, we spoke about it yesterday. Truma tzimeya is usable for what? Fuel. So I ate the coin's truma tzimeya. So what's the halacha? Mishalim chulin tohorim. I have to pay him back with chulin tohorim. So I have to pay him back with chulin, but I don't pay him back tamei chulin. I pay him back with chulin tohorim. Rashi says, d'chsiv, v'nasan l'koin es ha-kodesh, davar haroi lios kodesh parak ha-shas. So the idea is, I give him back something that is capable of being full-fledged truma. Shileim chulin tmeim, but let's say I paid him back with ritually impure chulin. Sumchas or mishum Rabbi Meir, sumchas and Rabbi Meir, mishum, excuse me, b'shogeg tashlum of tashlumen. If I did it unintentionally, then the repayment is valid. B'mezid, if I did it intentionally, then what? Ein tashlum of tashlumen. Then ultimately, again, my repayment is not a repayment. So again, Rabbi Meir is mechalek as to if I did it b'shogeg or mezid. If I did it b'shogeg, it's fine. If I did it b'mezid, it's not fine. Meaning I'd have to repay again with tar chulin. V'cham nacham say, echadzeh ve'echadzeh, tashlum of tashlumen, v'chozer u'mishalim chulin tohorim. The Chacham on the other hand take a simpler approach. They say, no, you know what? If you paid him back, if you accidentally ate his truma tamea, and you went ahead and you paid him back with chulin tameim, so it's fine, but almost as a penalty, you have to go back and what? You have to go back and pay him again with chulin tohorim. So what you did is acceptable repayment, but there's almost like a knas here, a penalty, that you have to pay him again. So the Gemara says, v'havinim, we ask about this. B'mezid, remember, according to Rabbi Meir said, if you intentionally pay him back with chulin tameim, ein tashlumav tashlumen, then his tashlumav is not a tashlumen. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Tavo alav bracha, are you kidding? If you eat truma tzimeya from the Kohen, and then what? You pay him back with chulin tzimeyan, you should actually get a shkoyach for that. Why? The achol mine midi, the lokachazi lebi me tumaso, the kamashali midi, the kachazi me tumaso. Also, listen to this interesting idea. Remember, Kohanim, you always kind of have to have like a backup stash. Now, what does that mean? Let's say you become tame. So if all you eat is truma, let's say you're a truma guy. So if all you eat is truma, then you have a big problem, because should you become tame, then what? You're stuck. So the Gemara says like this, I don't understand. If I ate the Kohen's truma tameya, and I pay him back chulin tameyim, I'm actually giving him back an item of value. Why? Because now I'm giving him back food that he could eat even when he's tame. See, the chap of chulin tameyim is something that he could eat. See, if I give him back truma, he could only eat that when he's tar, but if I give him back chulin tamein, he could even eat that what? When he himself is tamein. Va'amar Rava, va'amri le'kidei. Kidei, so Rava said, and others just attribute this to no one. Chisir me'achshav achiton, you're right. Here's how the Brisa reads. Achal truma tamea mishalim kol dehum. Both, if a person ate, and now when we say person, a non-Kohen, so I ate my friend Kohen's truma tamea, I can pay back anything. Now both, I pay back anything means what? Chulin tamein or chulin tahorin. Achot truma tahora. However, again, if I consumed his truma tahora, mishalim chulin tahorim, then I should pay back chulin tahorim. In other words, that you should go ahead and kind of repay that which you took. So if I ate chul, if I ate truma tameya, so then really whatever I pay back is fine, because if I pay back chulin tahorim, beautiful. If I pay back chulin tamein, beautiful also. Either way, the kohen is getting something of value. However, if I ate truma tahora, then I have to pay back chulin tahorin. What happens? Shilim chulin tamein. What happens if I paid back with chulin tamein? Asa sumcha, so mishum Rabbi Meir, sumcha sene Rabbi Meir, b'shogeg tashlum of tashlumin. If I did it b'shogeg, then what? Then the repayment is good. But b'mezit ain't tashlum of tashlumin. But if I did it intentionally, meaning if I paid back the chulin tahorin with chulin tamein, b'shogeg, then it works. But b'mezit, it doesn't work. The chum say no. Whether when if I consumed truma tahora and I repaid back with chulin tamein, then in that case what? Beim b'shogig, be amazing whether I did it intentionally or unintentionally. Tashlumav tashlumin. My tashlumin ultimately is good. However, the chozer umeshalim chulin tahorin. But I have to go back and pay again with chulin tahorin. So the payment is good, but there's another penalty to make him pay chulin tahorin. The Gemara says, one second. Now let's analyze this. V'ha'acha d'midaraisa tashlumi ma'al yahavi. So Rabbi, let's play this out. So now, the Gemara is bothered by Rabbi Meir's shita, right? So Rabbi Meir says that if I consumed chulin tahorin and I intentionally went ahead and paid back what? I consumed truma tahora, and I intentionally paid back chulin tamein. So what is the halacha? That payment is not good. That payment is not good. Right? Again, his lashon was mezit ain tashlum of tashlumin. So Gemara said, well, let's analyze this. So remember, mid oraisa, that's not true. Mid oraisa, if I eat the coins truma tahora, and I repay him with chulin tamein, mid oraisa, that payment is a valid repayment. How do we know that? Rashi says, "V'ha'cha de midoraisa tashlum of ma'ayinu de chulin tamein nami ruin lios kodesh kidrabi like." Because even chulin tamein is capable of becoming kodesh in some way. So therefore, midoraisa, if I go ahead and I consume the coins truma tahora and I intentionally pay him back with chulin tamein, that is a biblically valid repayment. The Gemara says, for example, di mekadish bless you, isha tafsu la kidushay. Rabbi says, what's the proof that it's a valid? That's a valid repayment. That if the kohen were to take this new chulin tamein that he got as repayment for consumption of his truma tahora, and he were to betroth the woman, be mekadesh with this money, or be that with this stuff, what would happen? The halacha is it's a valid kiddushin. Rabbi said, what does it show if it's a valid kiddushin? That it's his money. And yet, va'amar rabbanon ain't tashlum of tashlumin. And yet the rabbis come along and say that what? That his tashlumin is not a good tashlumin. Rabbi said, let's play this out for just a moment. If the rabbis say that his tashlumin is not a good tashlumin, that means that if he takes the chulin tameim that was repaid to him for consumption of his truma tahora, and he takes that grain, let's say, and he gives it to a woman as kesef kiddushin, that according to the rabbis, what would be the halacha? She is not mikudashas. What? So you're telling me now you're going to have a case where mid oraisa, a woman is mikudashas, but yet mid rabbanon you're going to say she's not mikudashas. And after all, if you say that the kasharinon ishes ishla alma, you'll be then again if rabbi says she's not mikudashas, okay, she'll go and she'll meet someone else, and potentially now you have a married woman accepting kiddushin from another man. To which the Gemara says, "Karisha ishes alma, my ain't tashlum of tashlum to come, Rabbi Meir." No. What does Rabbi Meir mean when he says that the payment is not a good payment? That if you repay intentionally, chulin tamein for the consumption of truma tahora, that such a payment is not good. What does he mean when he says that? The boy le mehadar tashlume chulin tahorin. Rabbi Meir says you have to go back and pay again chulin tahorin. But what? But your original payment is still a valid payment. So it's a penalty. But so one second, if that's the case, ihachi, sumchus hain rabbanon. Rabbi will say, if that's the case, then sumchus, and Rabbi Meir is saying the same thing, because sumchus said the same thing also. Sumchus said that if you do this intentionally, if you reap, remember, I ate the Truma Torah, and I repaid intentionally with chulin to me, and sumchus said, the payment is fine, but I still have to go back and pay chulin to Orin. Now, Rabbi Meir says the same exact thing. So if that's the case, hain rabbanon, amra vachare dravika, cannot consu shogig atu mezid ikavenayu. Oh, the nafkamina rabosai is what do we do in a shogig case? Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, consu shogig atu mezid ikavenayu. But be mayor be shogig tashlum of tashlumen. For lo boi lishlume tu su tahorim. The asra upon the mayor being be shogig being be mezid by the mother shoes. Oh, so you know what the nafkamina is? The nafkamina between them is the shogig case. According to be mayor, if I ate truma tahora and I accidentally paid back with chulin tamein, what's that locha? So I don't have to repay back anything. However, according to Sumchus, the halacha is even if I repaid b'shogeg, I still have to go ahead and make another payment of chulin tahorin. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says Tashma. So remember, we're just trying to keep finding cases where the rabbis seem to go ahead and actively uproot biblical law. So far we haven't been able to find cases, because remember, we're explaining each of them that no, the rabbis aren't really uprooting anything; they're simply requiring something additional. Tashma, dam shenitma uzrako b'shogeg. So what happens if you have blood, sacrificial blood, that became tamei? Now, obviously, after it becomes tamei, so after the animal slaughtered, you receive the blood, and the blood becomes tamei. Blood becomes tamei before zrika, before the sprinkling on the altar. So obviously, if it becomes tamei before it's sprinkled, you're not going to do zrika. But let's say again, you did it b'shogeg, you did the zrika b'shogeg, hortza, then halach l'maisa, the carbon is accepted. But maize, however, if you intentionally sprinkle the blood, even after realizing that what? That l'maisa, again, it was tamei, lo hortza, the carbon is not good. Ay, v'ha ha ha, d'midaraisa artsui miratza. But Rabbi said, you know that midaraisa, if you sprinkle tamei blood, sacrificial blood that is tamei, midaraisa, it works. That carbonically works, and yet disanya alma tzitz meratza. What does the tzitz atone for? Al adam va'al abaser va'al achilev shenitma ben b'shogeg ben b'mezid ben b'onis ben b'ratzam ben b'yachad ben mitzibur. The Rabbi said the tzitz, which is the head plate, the forehead plate of the Kohen Gadol that he wears, that says Kodesh Lashem, the tzitz is able to effect atonement for any part of the sacrificial service that may have become tamei and was still done, whether it became tamei intentionally, unintentionally, onis tzitz, whatever it is. Individual tzibur, the tzitz takes care of it. So Rabbi said, listen to this. So now what we're saying is, biblically speaking, even if you have blood that has become tamei, you're still permitted to what? Technically, go ahead and sprinkle it on the mizbeach. And yet, v'amir rabbanon lo hortza. And yet, the rabbis come along and say that what? No, if it became tamei before the sprinkling, what can you do with that blood? What can you do with it? You pour it out. You don't do anything with it. So now you have something that is biblically acceptable, but now rabbinically unacceptable. So the Gemara says, and what's going to happen? So we'll say, let's play this out. If the rabbis say that the blood is unacceptable, what does that mean for the carbon? Let's do the carbon. Carbon is no good, which means what? You have to bring another carbon. So the Gemara says, "Va'kahadar ma'ayil chulin la'azara." But Rabbi said, "You can't do this because the ma'isa just to bring another carbon is not a simple answer. Why? Because halacha the ma'isa Rabbi said there's a concept of chulin la'azara. Chulin la'azara means if you had a carbon that was perfectly good, and you now decide to bring another. Now this is not talking about voluntary offerings. Voluntary offerings you can bring whatever you want. But let's say I have to bring a chatos. I've been carbon chatos. I accidentally violated the halacha. I've been carbon chatos. And now what happens? So now the blood became tamei. So the rabbis say, spill it out, bring another carbon. And then what? I'll bring another animal. So we'll say, here's the problem. Mido oraisa, that blood is absolutely fit and can be sprinkled, which means that mido oraisa, when I bring another animal, is that animal called the chatos? No, that's what's called chulin la'azara, bringing an unconsecrated animal ultimately again to the Beis HaMikdash, which is problematic. So Gemara is saying over here, how could the rabbis come along and say that the blood is not permitted, thereby requiring me to go ahead and bring another carbon when biblically it's permitted? But it's not just a pshat that they're causing me to do something additional. It's that potentially they're causing me to do something that would be biblically prohibited by bringing chulin la'azara. Amar Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, My lo hortz of the kamar. What does it mean that it's not acceptable? Lahat yer basar ba'achila. No. It doesn't mean when it says that it's not acceptable that you have to spill out the blood and bring another carbon. What it means is the sacrificial service is fine, but you can't consume the meat of the carbon. Can't consume the meat. So let's say, for example, in a chatos, so the kohanim consume parts of the animal. So in this case, remember, the blood becomes tame, go through with the blood service, right? Kapara avabal in this kapru. Kapara is fully affected, but you can't eat the meat. So the Gemara says, 1 second. Sof, kamasakra achilas basar. 1 second. I can't eat meat. That's more traumatic. They're not sprinkling the blood, right? So what are you? Perfectly good meat is what's going to happen to it. So this hurts us to the core. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. In all seriousness, it's not just about eating, but part of atonement of the owners of the carbon is affected through Kohanic consumption. So how can you tell? So again, remember, biblically, I'm permitted to eat the meat. So I being a Kohen, I'm permitted to eat the meat. So again, how could it be lemaisa that the Gnag going to tell me that Rabbanan going to say the Kohen can't eat the meat? To which the Gemara says, "So kamasak achilas basar ksiv va'achlu atem asher kupar bahem melamei chak ohanim ochlu umbalim iskapim." So also the pasuk tells us that you will go ahead. Excuse me, va'achlu osam. I'm sorry, va'achlu osam asher kupar bahem. That ultimately, those who are atoned through this will ultimately eat. It teaches us that again, not really referring to the owners, but rather teaching us that the Kohanim eat. And the owners have atonement, which means that the Kohanic consumption is part of the atonement process. Amar Lei, so he responded to him, I'll tell you the difference. Shave v'altasa shiny. Oh, I will say, what's different over here? Where the rabbis are telling the Kohanim, yes, don't eat the meat. But the difference with don't eat the meat is, are the rabbis actively uprooting biblical law? No, they're passively uprooting it. They're telling the Kohanim not to do something. Look at Rashi, Shevi al Tasa. It's the last Rashi in Amud Aleph. Shevi al Tasa. Lava kirahi. This is not really considered to be an active uprooting of biblical law. Kigon, achilas basar. Asehi, kigon, right, va'amar rabbanon, shev v'al tochal, lava kira bi'adayim hu. So when the rabbis tell the Kohanim not to eat the meat, they're not actively uprooting biblical law. What are they telling the Kohanim to do? Sit and do nothing. Sit and do nothing. Don't eat the meat. He says, elam b'meila hi me'akra, aval truma deka'amar lo asa v'lo klom, umafkas la l'chulin akira mamashi. So we'll say, okay, we'll come back to the chulin case in just a moment. So the idea over here is, yes, are the rabbis uprooting biblical law? Technically, they are. They're telling the Kohanim not to do something that they are biblically entitled to do, but they're uprooting it with what we call shevi al tasa, through passivity. So to Amud Beis, we also listen to this. Amar Lei, boy la osfak. So he said to him that I was going to go ahead and bring up to you, I was going to ask you a whole bunch of kashas. From which cases? Orel hazo'a izemel sodin betzitzis v'kivsi atzeres. The shofar of those who also listen to this, interesting. All of these cases pose interesting halachic issues. So the case of Orel, Rashi points out over here, is the halacha is that when a non-Jew, the truth is it's not just a non-Jew, well, it is a non-Jew, someone converts, and they go ahead and they do bris milah. Rabbi said the halacha is that when a person does bris milah, they have tumas meis. For reasons, actually, we did this so again, Pesachim, right? That they're considered tumas meis. So we'll say again, now the halacha, now that's considered to be that's a rabbinic law. So if a ger converts on erev Pesach, and then what happens? He has now tumas meis. So what happens, Rabbi? So that rabbinic tumah will preclude him from what? From current Pesach. So there you have a situation of what? Of rabbinic law uprooting biblical law. Next, izemel. Rabbi, so what's the case of izemel? The case of izemel is that lemaisa, you're permitted to do bris milah, not permitted, obligated to do bris milah even on Shabbos. But remember again, let's say we saw this in Shabbos. Let's say the moel forgot his knife. I'm sorry. Did I skip hazo? I'm sorry. Hazo. Did I skip hazo? Oh, hazah, sorry. So hazah abosai means, let's say again, a person is tamei meis. Remember, you have to sprinkle the ashes of the para aduma on the individual days 3 and 7. But yet, let's say one of those days falls out on Shabbos. We don't do sprinkling on Shabbos. Why not? Because it's like tikkun mana. It looks like you're affecting change, fixing the individual. Rabbinically, you can't sprinkle. Let's say, again, it's Pesach that day, or it's Pesach the next day. So lemaisa, again, the person will be precluded from eating Karan Pesach. Still doesn't eat Karan Pesach. So another example of what? Rabbinic law uprooting biblical law. Izemel, Rashi points out over here, is the Gabe Mila. This is a situation where what? Where the Mohel forgot the knife. The Mohel forgot the knife. He didn't bring the knife to the shul on Erev Shabbos. So what's the halacha? We let him circumcise today, but we do not let him transport the knife on Shabbos, which effectively means what? No bris mila. So again, even if he only has to transport the knife through rabbinically prohibited areas, still we don't let him transport the knife. What do you see from here? Rabbinic law uproots biblical law. Next case, sudden betzitzis. Rabbi said, this is the case of where if a person has a linen garment, we don't put wool tzitzis on a linen garment. Aye, but you're allowed to, right? The laws of shatnez do not apply to a linen garment. The rabbis were afraid of what? The rabbis were concerned lest you come to do this on ksus laila, lest you have linen pajamas and you decide, I want to be the guy with tzitzis on his pajamas. I want to be, you know, everybody's got to start something. There's the guy who started the tefillin sweater, right? You know, the guy that had the Shabbos lamp. Somebody's got to be the guy who starts the tzitzis pajamas. So I want to go ahead and I want to have tzitzis. There's only one problem. The Rabbi said, remember, the din of tzitzis only applies to ksus yom, to clothing that you wear during the day, which means that what? Which means that lemaisa, if you end up having shatnez tzitzis, or shatnez nighttime tzitzis, you've got a big problem. Now, midda oraisa, technically speaking, even ksus laila could have shatnez with its tzitzis. Midda rabbanan, you cannot. And therefore, again, we say that you don't put tzitzis on a linen garment. Next, kivtse aseres. So I must say, it's interesting over here. Rashi points out, kivtse aseres, lo kibalti mi rabosai. I don't know what this case is. It's very interesting. I don't know what the case of kivtse aseres is. He writes, umiko makom kach nira be'inai, the kasher adaver. But what I think it is, and I think I'm right, shishano b'tav sefta, umayislam seches beitza, Gemara Perek Sheni, Kiv Se'atzer Sheshachtan Shalol Dushman Hadam Yizrak Vabas Yochel. So we're not going to get into this whole case, but essentially what this comes down to is a situation where ultimately, again, you brought Kiv Se'atzeres on Shabbos, and there was some type of disqualification in the Kiv Se'atzeres, where technically speaking, Midaraiset was still good, but Midrabanon it was not. Furthermore, the case of Shofar and Lulav. So what's the case of Shofar and Lulav? Case of Shofar and Lulav is, again, we don't blow Shofar on Shabbos, we don't take Lulav on Shabbos, which are what? Uprooting of biblical law. So Rabbi said, in all of these cases, I wanted to ask you, these are all examples of what? The rabbis uprooting biblical law, but hashta dishanis lan shevi al tasa. Now that what? Thank you. Now that you went ahead and you said, oh, no shevi al tasa lo ma'akarhu, kula nami shevyatasininhu. But now that you gave your answer, we'll say that what? That Chazal do approve biblical law. When do they approve biblical law? When it's a shevyatasa, when it's passive. Ah, now I understand. What's the common denominator, Rabosa, in all of these cases that we just quoted? Of Arel, Hazah, Izemel, Sadin, Tzitzis, Kivsi, Hatzara, Shofar, Lulav. They are all shevyatasa. It's true, I end up violating biblical law, but through passivity, not through actively uprooting those laws. So now we've established, Rabbi Sai, is the rabbis absolutely do have the right to be oker, doraisa, as long as that is in the form of a shev v'yaltasa. So the Gemara says, Tashma, Eilav Tishmon. So Rabbi Sai, the Pasuk says, you have to listen to him. Now this is talking about the Navi. You have to listen to the Navi, right? Afilu omer lecha avar al achas mikomis or shebatorah. Even if the Navi tells you that you have to go ahead and violate one of the mitzvahs in the Torah, you still have to go ahead and what? You still have to go ahead and listen to him. The Gemara gives an example. Could go in Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel. Just like what happened to Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel. Eliyahu HaNavi has a showdown against the Navi HaBal, and Eliyahu HaNavi does something amazing. He builds a bama. He builds an altar outside of the Beis HaMikdash, or outside of the Mishkan, on Har HaKarmel. I will say, at the time that the Mishkan was standing, there was an Isra and Bamos. You cannot build altars outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And yet, Eliyahu HaNavi still did it. So the Gemara says, HaKol Afi Shal Shal. So I will say, what do you see over here? This is an example of what? Now we're calling Eliyahu HaNavi the rabbis. That's essentially how we're labeling him over here. You see over here a situation of the rabbis actively uprooting biblical law. Shiny Hasam, the Kasav Elav Tishmon. It's different because the Pasuk says that if the Navi tells you to do something, you have to listen to the Navi. So the Gemara says, V'ligmar mine, I don't understand, so why don't they use this as a paradigm? Why don't they say, fine, Elav Tishmon teaches me that, but I have to listen to the rabbis, even if the rabbis what? Even if the rabbis go ahead and tell me to actively violate biblical law, I should still listen. To which the Gemara says, no. Migdar milsa shiny. Look at Rashi. Migdar milsa. La'asos geder v'takana kihasam sheheshivan ayidei kach me'avodas kochavim. Since what the Gemara answers is that what Eliyahu HaNavi did is an exception to the rule. It's not the rule. Migdar milsa means he had to create a geder. Also remember, we actually had this sugya of is la'asos la'ashem hefaru sorasecha. That there are times where dramatic activity is permitted, even active uprooting of certain biblical law is permitted. Why? Because there is a concern that if you don't do it, you run the risk of greater erosion of Torah. So again, Eliyahu HaNavi, this is not a model. This is not a paradigm. This is what? This is an exception. This is an exception. There was a need because Avodah Zarah was so rampant. There was a need for a public spectacle that would forever for the Jewish people was one chapter of Navi, but that would forever go ahead and put to bed the notion that Avodah Zarah was authentic. Eliyahu HaNavi had to do something in a public dramatic display, and therefore the bummel was permitted. But this is not a license to actively uproot rabbinic law, but rather a very specific instance of Eis Lasos Lashem Heifaru Sarasecha, which Chazal translate is, there are times where in order to do for God, Heifaru Sarasecha, we have to annul certain precepts of the Torah. Tashma, Bitlo Mavotal, Div Rebbe. We'll get to this in Gittin. These are interesting cases. Let's say a husband goes out and sends a get to his wife, sends a get to the Shaliach, and then what happens? He convenes a Beis Din. He convenes a bit. So he sends a get to the shaliach. He sends a get with the shaliach to the wife. And let's say again, the wife is a day's journey away. So what happens? After an hour after he sends the shaliach, he knows the get has not yet arrived at the wife. What does he do? He convenes a beis din. And what does he do? He's mevatel the get. He says, what does it mean to mevatel the get? I changed my mind. I don't want to give the get. So we'll say, what's the halacha? So bitlo mevatel the Rebbe. Rebbe says, look, the truth is it's not good, but l'maisa, husband has every right to be mevatel a get before what? Before it reaches the hands of his wife. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, inu yachol levatel v'lohos vatano. Not true. He can't be mevatel the get. He can't add anything onto the conditions of the get, because why? Im kein makoach beis din yofa. Because what good is beis din? What is the power of the court if the husband could just simply go ahead and change things on his own? So the Gemara says, one second. V'ha'acha d'midaraisa batel get. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about over here? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Very nice, makach beis din yafa. Tell me, does a husband biblically have the right to go ahead and negate the get once the shaliach left his purview? The answer is yes. So you're going to tell me now that in order to preserve the authority of Beis Din, you're going to say that something that is biblically effective is ineffective. How can you say that? You see, Rabbi Islam. So let's play this out. So this is what you're telling me is like this. Reuven sends a get to divorce his wife Rachel. He sends it in the hand of Shimon the Shaliach. It's going to take Shimon a day to get there. An hour after Shimon leaves, Reuven gathers a Beis Din together and says, I hereby mevatel the get. So now Rabbi Gamliel says, Shimon Gamliel says, no, the bittul is ineffective because why? We have to preserve the authority of Beis Din. Very nice, he has to preserve the authority of Beis Din, but biblically what he did is effective, which means that what? That rabbinically, when the get reaches Rachel's hands, we're going to say she's divorced, we're going to allow her to get remarried, and then, but yet what? Midda'oraisa, she's not divorced, and yet midda'oraisa, well, what does it mean she's not divorced? It means that second marriage is what? That second marriage is adultery. So how could the rabbis permit something that biblically is prohibited? I'll tell you why. To which the Gemara says, that was part of the previous days. Ma'adim ekadesh adaitiz rabbanam ekadesh. So Rabbosai, some of you mentioned this yesterday. When a person affects Kiddushin Rabbosai, all marriage is a rabbinic institution. Marriage is a rabbinic institution, and therefore, when the rabbis go ahead, when a man is mekadesh a man, he does so adaitiz dirabanan. What did I say? Man's kaddish man. Sorry. Okay. I'm gonna edit that later. So when a man is mekadesh a woman, so again, when a man is mekadesh a woman, he does so adaita drabana. So this is what we say when we marry our wives. We say, did I just say it again? Right. When we marry our wives, we say, right. Hare at mekudesh asli kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. So kedas Moshe v'Yisrael means I am betrothing you in accordance with the framework of halacha. The rabbis create the framework, the halachic framework of marriage, and I buy into that framework. And therefore, va'afkinu rabbanon likidushin. Therefore, Rabbosai, in this case, this is very interesting. The rabbis are not trying to say that in fact she's divorced when biblically she's not divorced. I mean, the rabbis are not going to actively uproot biblical law. So to say that the get is effective to say that the get is effective, when in fact, again, biblically, the get is not effective. We can't do that. But you know what we can do? We could retroactively annul the marriage. We could essentially say that, again, if the get's not going to go, we're going to get her out of this marriage one way or another. If we can't get her out of it through the get, we're going to go ahead and simply afkin rabban the condition, which means retroactive annulment of the marriage. And I will say, this is a much more complicated sugya, which we're not going to deal with today. We're going to deal with it, Amir Hashem, in kiddushin, this concept of hafkaz kiddushin. But nevertheless, so again, what essentially the Gemara is answering over here is, we're not uprooting biblical law. You know what we're uprooting over here? We're uprooting the marriage and its totality, and that we, the rabbis, have the right to do because marriage is a rabbinic framework. That's fine if he was mekadesh her with money, because then you could go in and say what? You could say that that money that he gave her, that he thought he was giving her as kiddushin, really is relabeled as what? Relabeled as what? What is that money? It's a gift. It was a gift, it was a matana. However, again, Kaddish b'biyah ma'ikal meimar. But Rabbi said, what happens if he affected kiddushin with biyah? Right? What are you gonna? How exactly are you gonna repurpose that? Right? I mean, I'm saying, how are you gonna relabel that? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you, shavu rabbanon lebilah, so bilas nus. It was an act of znus. You thought it was an act of marriage. It wasn't an act of marriage. It was an act of znus. Tashma. Amr b'lozer ben Yaakov. So we'll say the point over here is what? So therefore, again, we keep trying to bring examples of where the rabbis are actively uprooting biblical law, and each time we're explaining that, no, they're in fact not uprooting biblical law. Tashma, another case. Amr b'lozer ben Yaakov, shamati shebeiz din makin va'onshin shalom min ha-Torah v'lo la'avra al-divrei Torah el-laso siag la-Torah. So we'll say, I've heard that there are times where the rabbis administer punishments that are not biblically mandated. And not because a person violated Torah law, but rather in order to create a siyag, in order to create a protective fence. So there are times that the rabbis administer punishments for things that may not be punishment worthy, and they're not trying to make their law into biblical law, but rather to create a protective fence. For example, Maaseh ba'adam shirachav asus b'Shabbos b'mei Yevanim. There was an episode of a man who rode on an animal on Shabbos in the days of the Greeks, the days of the Hellenists, Hanukkah story, ve'aviyu lebeizdin, uskaluhu. And they brought him to Bezin and they killed him. They executed him for that. Now I will say, so remember, what's the nature of riding on an animal on Shabbos? So I will say, remember, again, most probably it's Dirabbanan. You know, there's potentially a Doraisa if you ride an animal that is not normally ridden by animals, if you ride an animal on Shabbos that's not normally ridden by human beings, then maybe you might violate an Issa D'oraisa of Shvisas Behema, of not allowing your animal to rest. But assuming that you're riding like a horse, right, which for a horse, having a human rider is not considered to be avoda, you're talking about a rabbinic prohibition. We actually did this between Mincha Marav of maybe ripping off a branch and coming to whip the animal to get it to move. So it's an Issa D'rabbanan, it's not an Issa D'oraisa. And yet what? They killed him. They executed him. So the Gemara said, Lo mibnei shiroi lekach. The truth is, again, not because the rabbis are trying to say that there's a death penalty for violation of rabbinic law. Elo shashot tzricha lekach. But because, again, during those days, there was the fear of rampant Shabbos desecration, and therefore, the rabbis felt the need to make a dramatic example of the need to go ahead and maintain the sanctity and halachic allegiance to Shabbos. Another example, v'shuv maaseh ba'adam echad, she'atiach b'ishto tachas hata'ina. There was another example of a man who had relations with his wife underneath the fig tree. In other words, in public. In public. So the Gemara said, v'heviu b'beis din, and they brought the man to beis din, vilku, and they flogged him. I was saying, now, what did he do wrong? It was his wife. Now, again, what this was, it was a breach in the norms of morality. So they brought him to beis din, and they flogged him. Lo mibnei shiroi lekach, not because he deserved it, Ela sha'ashot tzricha lekach. Rather, what? But because the hour needed it. In other words, apparently, whatever was going on, there was some type of breakdown in morality. So to engage in this type of behavior was totally inappropriate. Therefore, they had to set the framework straight. The Gemara says, so these are not considered examples of rabbis uprooting biblical law. Migdar milsa shayni. Because what's happening over here? They're trying to create gidarim. They're trying to create the protective fence in order to safeguard Jewish society and halacha. So we'll say now weiter. So the Rav says, so what comes out from this sugi is essentially, we find that the rabbis have the license to uproot biblical law, but only when, or only how? B'shev v'altaseh, through passive means. But through active means, they do not have the right to uproot biblical law with one dramatic example, and that is horas sha'a, an extenuating circumstance, at a time where they fear that, again, if they don't do something dramatic, there'll be a wholesale erosion of Torah, then they're permitted to do something a little bit more dramatic that even actively uproots biblical law. But even that, that's a dramatic situation. That is the exception, not the rule. A little bit weiter. I'm sorry? And Abba say, again, remember, now back to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah said in this case over here, where she was married to a man, he went overseas, witnesses came, or witness came along and said that husband died, she remarries husband number two, husband number one comes back. So what's the halacha? She has to leave both husbands. And one other example the Mishnah said is that if both husbands are Kohanim, neither of them can become tummy for her. Meanwhile, how do we know this? The Gemara says, Dichsiv, Kim L'Sheira, Karov Eilav, because the Pasuk says, who could a coin become tummy for? For the relative who is close to him, Va'amar Mar, She'iro, Zu Ishto, who is She'er? This refers to his wife. Uksiv lo yitama ba ba mavlehi chalo. Yet the pasuk also says that a husband, a kohen, cannot become tamei ultimately to a wife lehi chalo who profanes him. Ayin a legal marriage. Yesh ba'ashem matamei v'yesh ba'ashem matamei. So we see from here that there's a time where a kohanic husband becomes tamei and a time where a kohanic husband does not become tamei. Ha ketzad. So what's the case? Matamei hu leishto ksheira ve'enu matamei leishto psula. He can become tummy for a wife who is in a legal marriage, right? But he cannot become tummy for a wife with whom he's in an illegal marriage. Therefore, husband number one comes back. Essentially, both husband one and husband number two are in an illegal marriage to this woman, and therefore neither can become tummy for her. And neither husband is permitted, is entitled to whatever it is she finds. Time my amarabana mitzias isha labaylo. Rabbi say, why is it that under normal circumstances we say, why did the rabbi say that if a woman finds something, that object she finds goes to her husband? In order that there should not be animosity. Now, what does that mean? Because since a husband is obligated to support his wife, so therefore it makes sense that if she finds something, it should go to the husband, again, to help offset the cost of her support. But however, again, here, the more animosity, the merrier. Why, Rabbi say? Because again, remember, we want the dissolution of both of these marriages. So therefore, we are totally uninterested in preserving any type of harmony or any type of love or any type of shalom in this marriage. Therefore, if she finds something, let her keep it. And if the husbands become resentful about that, wonderful, because it just fuels the fire for divorce. And furthermore, again, they are not entitled to her earnings. Why did the rabbi say that her husband is entitled to her earnings? Mishum de'ka'acha mizone, because she's given mizonos. Hacha keva de mizone lesli. But Rabbi say in this case, remember, she doesn't get mizonos. Therefore, what? Therefore, ma'aseh yadeh lav didei. Therefore, again, he does not get her earnings. One more piece, we'll finish for today. V'lo mefer nedareha. He's not permitted to annul her vows, meaning neither husband has the right of annulment. Taima ma'am rachmana ba'al mefer. Why does the husband have the right to go and annul the vows? Kedesh lo tisgana. Because Rabbi say, if the woman makes a neder that is going to cause a problem in shalom bayis and make her repulsive, literally means repulsive, but it means create friction in the marriage. So the husband has the right to annul that to preserve shalom bayis. But again, hacha tiskana v'tiskana. Here, let her come as repulsive as she wants. Meaning, the idea of Yavosa is many of these entitlements and these rights are there in order to preserve shalom bayis. But we don't want preservation of shalom bayis over here. We want the dissolution of these marriages, and therefore, again, these rights do not exist. Yavosa yasher koach. Schedule for Shabbos is Emir Tzashem Yehuda Neuberger is going to be giving the daf Emir Tzashem tomorrow morning, 8:15, followed by Shachris. Yasher koach. Chassidus on the parsha regular time, 8:35.